Welcome to Why Is This Good, a podcast by the Naples Writers Workshop. I'm Christine and I'm here with John. Hey, John.
Hello.
Okay, I picked a story called These Golden Cities by K. David Wade. Back home, night settled thick, a pale gray sky full of shadows. As Dom and I made our way to the Unimart, an erratic bat stumbled drunk overhead. A homeless man watched us from an upturned bucket of paint. He coddled a silver-furred rabbit whose sleek coat made its handler appear the perfect gentleman, if a mangy one. I stared hard. They refused to disappear. I texted Grace. It was important that I watch the sunrise with her for some reason. Tonight, I decided she'd either forgive or condemn me for good. All I hoped was that she'd look me in the eyes while she did it. I needed to see for myself what she meant. Anyway, Dom said, as we entered the store, I hadn't realized he'd been talking. My teeth are glowing. The linoleum did not ripple, and the lights did not swallow us whole. In fact, the store seemed extremely orderly, as if all the shelves had been recently stocked, all the coolers replenished. I did have a warm, cozy feeling in my chest, but my mental faculties were crisp. You figure out if y'all are coming? I asked, settling on a pint of peach tea. Yeah, Dom said, can't. My first big art show was in April, and I had invited Dom and Eric to New York on a whim. I knew money would be tight, what with Eric's newborn and Dom saving up for a new place, but I figured one weekend would be good for all of us. We had slowly started to drift since I left for school, started to settle differently, like dust on opposite ends of the same windowsill. I figured them seeing some of the world that I saw might reconnect us. Dom grabbed a small bottle of chocolate milk. On the label, a cow chewed her cud before daybreak, like literally chewed. Beyond her, the sun hung low in unerring, eternal dawn. Sorry, Dom said finally. Next time. I think I was doing what I always do when I find stories these days, which is searching for free stories online. But this time I was looking for something a little bit more modern. I probably even use that word.
Recent.
Yeah, because I feel like a lot of the best short story results.
There's like Nabokov, Hemingway.
Yeah, it's the same stories over and over, the lottery. Like, and you've read
Yeah.
most of them. And if we haven't had them on the podcast, then it's because we don't really care to or whatever.
Or
We're
they're
scraping
too
the bottom of the
long.
barrel. Yeah, I mean there's a lot of classics and we see them again and again, and even if they're not a classic, they're of the same style.
That Melville story, Bartleby the Scrivener. I'm
Yeah.
like, oh, we should do that one, but it's so long.
Yeah, I don't want to do long ones either. I mean this one felt pretty long, but yeah, when I started reading this one, I was like, okay, this is what I'm looking for. I'm looking for something that doesn't necessarily feel like it's going to try to hit me over the head with how meaningful and poetic. It just felt like a real story. And I think what I really liked about it, like on this first page and even the section that I read, he just tells you what they're gonna do that night. Like on the beginning of the story, we headed to Dom's house around sunset after a long day of bullshitting, and they're talking about how they're gonna go pick up these drugs and they're gonna go trip acid together. And the main character, I forget his name, he's back in his hometown after having gone to his first semester of college, and he's going to like an art school and doing film type stuff, it sounds like. And he's just trying to reconnect with these guys that he feels are his closest friends and the most familiar to him. But even one semester away from them, he realizes like how different their lived experiences have
Yeah,
become.
everything changes.
Yeah, and so like on Electric Literature's website, the guy that's recommending this story calls the article "Home is a Trip You Can't Ever Take Again." And I really like that, even though it turns out it's not the title of this story, because it's a little bit of a play on this idea that like they're on an acid trip, but just like you can't recreate any kind of a drug trip, you can't recreate your childhood, you can't recreate high school, you can't recreate any of the circumstances that created like your friendship to begin with. You just have to hope that like your friendship is what changes with the times. So that's what this main character is struggling with. And then ultimately what he's really focusing on, even though I would argue like he's more upset about his friendships falling apart, he's really focusing on this girl that he wants to continue to see, right?
Or at least to kind of figure out what their closure looks like.
Yeah, he feels like it's unresolved. And so like that section is like either they were going to keep talking or she was going to condemn him. And yeah, he needs to like see it face to face to get it through his head. But I feel like there's probably a lot of stories like this. I can't think of another one that we've read on the podcast where it just follows one evening
Oh,
of a
yeah.
character, and there's usually like drinking or drugs, and there's this like element where like the more out of it this main character becomes, the more clear their thoughts become, right? Like the harder this guy is tripping, the more he's sort of arriving at a conclusion for himself, you know what I mean? And that part was interesting.
It's an interesting thing how clear this is,
Yeah.
like the clarity of the thought process. Like in the section you read, it jumped out at me while you're reading it. It said the linoleum did not ripple. The lights did not swallow us whole. In fact, the store seemed extremely orderly, as if all the shelves had been recently stocked, coolers replenished. I was like, the reason he's commenting like that is because they're supposed to be tripping. They're on acid.
Yeah.
Like, and yet it doesn't look weird. It's not like
right. Weird.
So this whole thing is like an experience being like mediated by acid, right?
In
some way. But like, I remember a long time ago, this is like 20 years ago, 20 something years ago, I tried to read Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test, and I got a little ways into that. And I was like, this reads like an acid trip. It reads like the prose is trying to put you on a trip. And I was like, I don't want to do that. I was not into that at the moment. And so I didn't finish it. Was that Tom Wolfe that wrote that?
I don't know.
It was like a gonzo journalism thing.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly the situation. So I assume he took acid and he was trying to impart that feeling. The whole gonzo journalism seems odd to me, but whatever. But this he didn't do that in this story. Like, he didn't like try to make you feel it that way. It was more like telling you kind of concrete, specific details like you would want out of any story, but just kind of like lent themselves. Like, there's a talking cow on the milk carton.
Right.
It's like, you know, or not talking, but chewing. Like, it's an animated cow on the milk carton.
Which sometimes I feel like, I think in this story, this narrator has not done acid before.
I thought they had done it a couple times.
Is that what it says? Or he hasn't
done it in
a while?
There's a little confusion about like flashbacks.
Oh yeah, it says I'd done acid a couple times with the melting pot. Yeah, you're right.
Because he's remembering things halfway through this. It's like, then there was that time this happened, and then we come back to the present. It's a little like, that's not clear, because I think that is a little bit like the thought process disconnected, and like you have to kind of like give leeway because, oh, they're on acid. That's why we're not exactly sure what's going on.
I think though that maybe there's elements of a type of writing style where you feel like you're on acid that are somehow authentic. But sometimes like it feels like this version of events is more authentic, where like you're aware that you're tripping.
Yeah.
So things are not completely unhinged. Like, you're watching the cow on the carton and you know that's not right. I mean, the section that I read includes that little bit where he sees the homeless man with the rabbit and he's like, they would not disappear. So it's like, you kind of know that he knows, like, he's still sussing out his environment. You know what I mean? They're not like holed up at home, like freaking out. They're out in the world and they're like, oh, what's that? I can't really tell. Yeah. So it feels like authentic that way. And then, to your point about how like maybe the flashbacks are a little bit confusing and maybe that's the authentic part of the experience. That's what I like about stories like this that just kind of follow a night of like drinking or whatever, is that that is the authentic thing that takes place, but it's also what helps this character come to whatever conclusion, right?
Yeah.
It is the act of like remembering these things out of order and relating everything to one another. And, you know, even like when you see people like get really emotional when they drink or whatever, like it's messy and stupid, but some people are actually having like breakthroughs when it happens to them. You know, it feels like he's having a very important experience, even though he's high. He's not engineering like these revelations, is my point.
There's like a moment near the end, you know, most of this is told in that style of like, you know, it's kind of like the impressions of the character, you know, dialogue, a kind of immediate thoughts, you know, like about like the milk carton or about the convenience store, like noticing the linoleum and kind of looking to see if it's warped, you know, because, you know, looking for the effects of the acid. But then there's this near the end, it says, I never had a trip hold me longer than 8 hours, and it had been 9 or so since we dropped. I felt residue, and then going through things, I felt a certain freedom wash over me, a pure breeze, a staying presence. And this is like impression, this is kind of character based impressions, but then it steps back a little bit and it's like almost like a comment or an editorial or kind of like a point of view outside of the fiction, like a omniscient narrator steps in. But you attribute it to the character as you're reading because you've been in his head all this time.
Right.
But it says, that which we call home is simply that. It may change as we all change. It may never even be named, yet it remains inescapably familiar. And in that recognition lies the hope that a piece of you is unchanged too. I feel it's almost in a different style than the rest of it, right? But it's like, this is like my thesis statement. This is my realization after this night out, and I have to get to it. I have to put it in here. Like, this could have even been the first line I wrote of this story. And then I have to wrap everything around it. And then it returns immediately back to, I arrived at Grace's house unscathed. You know, it's back right into the moment. I think sometimes you can build a whole kind of story of immediacy in order to get to that like universal statement. You can't do that every paragraph, but you can step back like maybe once in a story. Maybe if you're Joseph Conrad, you can do it twice, right? But that's like the moment,
right?
That kind of everything builds to. And then the immediate fiction, the immediate immediate story, all the events and feelings and emotions kind of like lend support to that moment. I would say structurally, there's other takeaways you can have. There's other kind of like feelings that you can get from this story, but that feels like a stylistic standout because of the way it's presented.
Yeah. And like you said, you can only do it maybe once or twice, but it's because you have to earn it, and because it is such a departure, and because it is kind of like slapping the reader over the head in a way. We don't want to see you be too clever too often. And if we haven't understood that that was the conclusion you were about to like articulate in that section, then we've missed the point entirely, right? Like you haven't earned it.
The great thing about this is it goes on after that and it allows another feeling to happen. Like you have the character come to this, like this kind of peace about things, and then it keeps going. And so there's I want to say resolution to that. So you can kind of see its effect on things after the fact, which is nice.
And then, I mean, like you said, the story goes on from there, but it very quickly wraps up, and it's this next final part is when he's finally with Grace. And that feels, the section that we're talking about feels like the point of the story and the closest he's going to get to a resolution with Grace, right? Which is that we might not end up together, but we still had something, and that's still like intact. You know what I mean? Like, even though this fell apart and maybe this narrator's to blame, there's still something that was real and true, and they both know it existed, even though it's not going to happen anymore.
I marked that moment. I love that moment, because let me read that. It says, "We didn't speak, not with words anyway. We brushed arms once, accidentally, and when our elbows touched again, I understood Grace was soothing me. My heartbeat boomed in the space between us. There was nothing really to say. She'd finished senior year and head off to college, somewhere far enough away to cut her hair and become someone new. I'd spend the semester in Italy, weekends in random European hostels, and then head back to New York, where some friends and I had just signed a lease on a Williamsburg loft. The next time we saw each other, Grace and I, we might not even notice. Only a feeling inside an airport, a vague second glance on passing trains. Or maybe there'd be more. Grab a drink, try again. That would be okay too." And I was like, this is like an emotional culmination where he's coming to accept what's about to happen, like the rest of his life. But the comment I thought of when I read this is like, this isn't meant to be a glimpse of the real future. It's supposed to be describing a feeling. So this is not a real scene of them passing in an airport or on a train or what's actually going to happen. It's more of like how he feels about the moment that's happening right now. It's like, whatever happens after this, if we separate, if we never see each other again for any reality, that's fine. Like, I've come to terms with that. And like, that's what I'm feeling right now, is that it's okay if we bifurcate from here on.
Yeah. I love stories that do this. I know I've talked about this a lot, like in the workshop. I love stories that go from the present moment and kind of predict in a little bit, like stretch forward and say like, maybe this would happen, maybe this would happen, maybe this would happen. And like, we don't know which of those happens, but to your point, like the fact that he's exploring these options and feels like this or this is more likely tells you that he is having some kind of resolution in the present. You know, the way he's viewing how the future could be tells you everything you need to know about what he's going to come away from this moment with. So, because otherwise he could have said something like, and the next time I saw her, I'd pretend I didn't. And the next time she saw me, like, you know, X, Y, Z. Like, it could be like these really negative predictions, but instead he's kind of like, and in the future, maybe so much of this will be behind us and we'll have forgiven so much of it or forgotten that like, we'll be able to be new versions of ourselves without any like baggage.
It'll be okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is almost like Bullet in the Brain was the whole story about being that moment. And this is just like a tiny little version of that for a paragraph.
Yeah. And probably the right amount for a story like this. So even though he doesn't have all these like super powerful sections like that last, like what we just summarized, or this one paragraph, which we're describing as like a departure, that's kind of like the nail on the head for this story. There's so many little things that are happening throughout with Dom and with all of the other friends that he's encountering, which are like reinforcing this idea for him that things are being severed, right? That whatever reality or like impression he had of whatever relationship is like firmly in the past and cannot be recreated and won't be the same going forward. But he's having to like become okay with each time it happens, right?
Yeah.
Every time he like sees someone, it's like he's encountering them again for the first time and he's kind of aware of it. And even though he's like trying to have a good time tonight, he keeps thinking about how this is one night and the next semester of his life is going to be in a foreign country. He doesn't even know what it's going to look like, but he can safely assume that it's going to change him dramatically because going to school in New York did.
Yeah.
And he's just like lamenting all of this before it's even come to pass. I like it because it feels really familiar. I didn't go to college like far away, but when you're at that age, like you still know that it's pivotal. You just don't know how it's going to shake out.
Yeah, you can feel it even if if you're not, even if you're not analyzing it, it's like lurking in the background always. You mentioned like all the friends and stuff. One of the things I really like about this is how the narrative choreographs all these random people that just show up
Yeah.
to be like a name. And then you don't, as a reader, I don't know who that name
I don't know
is.
who they are, yeah.
But then you kind of get a sense of them very briefly, and then they're gone. And it kind of mimics his like, oh, I know this person's name. I remember them from before, but I've changed and they've changed and everything's different. And I'm not exactly sure where we're standing. I'm also on acid. So it's like you get a couple of impressions of people and then
Yeah.
they flit away as a reader. And that's kind of his experience of it too. I just thought that the choreographing, you know, a lot of stories are like you get really intense into one perspective, maybe two characters, and they might meet somebody or other. And there might be like little peripherals, but there's so many like interactions with people that are brief.
Yeah.
And there's conversations that happen between them. And like, it's just well choreographed in that way too, I think.
Yeah. And it feels like this is like a real night, you know?
Yeah.
They're running into people, but they're not hanging out with them.
Yeah. That's like the very human aspect of this. It's like, that's, we're social animals, we're social creatures, you know? It's stories are about human beings and about relationships and where you are in the world. And the world is other people. It's not like where you are in the forest. It's where you are in the social world. So like having all these people come in and kind of show us as readers where that character is in relationship to all these other people.
Yeah.
It's important to be able to choreograph that thing as a writer.
Right. I think there are like several sections throughout, which are like, if you took them out and you line them all up in order, they're all building to this ending that we've talked about, where they're all
Yeah.
circling the same idea. I think it's interesting too, that like he's having new exciting experiences that he wants to have, and where he's from, like he's Black and most people that he associates with are, and then he's going to this new university and experiencing these new things with like new types of people, and he still wants to process it with somebody that is from home, right?
Yeah.
The only way that you can like process what's new and different is like with somebody that's like familiar and knows that it is different. Like he's got all these friends, but they're not processing this together. He's not like, oh man, this is really weird, like I kind of miss home and all this is really different. Instead he's like, I gotta call Grace. She doesn't want to hear from me, but I need
Man,
to talk to her about this. And even Dom's not like available for this type of conversation.
Oh yeah. Like. That feeling is so familiar. Like I don't remember articulating it, but I do
yeah.
remember the feeling of it. Like all the new experiences that were happening away from home. And then you reach back to a friend's, it's almost like an anchor. It's almost like you want to reconnect with them in order to process
yeah.
what happened or what is happening, how things are changing, how the possibilities in the world, or just to like kind of retreat into something familiar briefly as like a safe haven. There's like a lot to that. It's so fertile for storytelling.
Yeah, this is like a tender little age, like
yeah.
new college kids. And what's funny about it and what maybe feels like, you mentioned reading the story, I'm feeling old.
I think that was off air.
It was off
I'm
air,
very
but
young. I'm
I'd like
very
to bring
young.
that up here. I'd like to put it on the record. But I think what you meant by that was like the maybe specific experience of this feels out of reach. You know, maybe you don't remember tripping on acid, but the feeling is like so familiar, like we're saying. But it's also, it makes me feel old in the sense that, I looked and I think this main character's name is Michael. But for Michael, this is like so pivotal. This is all consuming. And me, even being like 15 years removed from college, 20 years removed from college, I'm reading it and I'm thinking like, it's okay though. You know, like it feels like the end of the world in a lot of ways and it feels really, really sad, but it's also not as big a deal as he thinks it is. I feel old in that sense where I'm like a little dismissive of it, right? Like when you watch like a kid get their heart broken for the first time, you're like, I know this feels like the end of your world, but it's not. It's kind of pathetic to watch you go through it. I feel old in that sense, but I love that he's capturing it in a way that doesn't like dismiss what this is. I'm not in college anymore, but I can still kind of read it and think like, yeah, this is exactly what it's like.
Yeah, I think I felt, because I was imagining, I felt more old, like all the writers are young and they're closer to this experience. And
yes.
I'm trying to like get my old man stories published, like worried about death and they're just worried
yeah.
about life, right?
Right,
it's
right,
a
right.
Different point of view.
Yeah,
and
oh,
so
for
I was
sure.
imagining like editors, you know, young grad students who have to read for the literary magazine, college literary magazine. And they're like, how much can they connect to my old man version of seeing the world?
Right.
They're more likely to connect to this version of it, right?
Yeah. This like modern voice just feels like it's a story about things that people are currently going through and currently in touch with. And you don't have to like take the added step of imagining a life in a world that's not your own. I feel like when we read like, you know, my favorite story in high school book was Jane Eyre, as if I knew anything about that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was having to make so many leaps of so many different kinds that I didn't even realize I was making. But what if Jane Eyre, that same story had been written by like a modern writer. Like, how much more enamored would I have been? How much more authentic would it have felt? Like, when you remove the barriers of having to like imagine who this person is in relation to you, when it just feels like you. I imagine there's like a million readers of K. David Wade who are reading this and they're like him and they're of his time and maybe even of a place like his. And they're like, this feels really authentic to me. And I don't have to do these mental gymnastics to make it feel that way. It just is. There's just such value in that type of writing. And that's what I feel like is lost when we put these classics on a pedestal. I'm like, great, they're going to be classics forever. But the more we march forward in time, the less relatable they feel. The more work I have to do to imagine what it must have been like. Even stories that are written like pre-cell phone. You know, when you watch an episode of Seinfeld, there's so many things that you're just that are missing because they're not of your time.
I wonder what it would be like to reread Catcher in the Rye or something now.
Yeah.
Because that was like the teenage story. And it'd be interesting in two ways. Like now, 70 years later, and I'm much older. So how would I read it?
Right.
So there's two things. The world is a little different. I'm a little different. But the other thing is like, we can still read the Iliad or the Odyssey or Gilgamesh or something and feel that human connection because we're always human beings. We can always recognize ourselves in human experiences. It's nice to see your kind of social circumstances reflected back at you.
Yeah. And even like your manner of speaking.
Yeah.
This one's pretty dialogue heavy.
Yeah.
And the dialogue, I imagine, I mean, it feels authentic to me when I'm reading it. I'm like, this sounds like an actual conversation he's having with all these different characters and how they would, like you said, just be roving in and out of their night and striking up these familiar conversations.
I remember my first year or two of college trying to come up with stories. I was trying to write screenplays at the time for some reason. I don't know why. I think I bought a camcorder. Maybe I wanted to film something. But all the stories I was pulling out were just like random things me and my friends did. And I was like, oh, this could be a movie. I was like thinking of like Pulp Fiction or something and turning like some random night into a story.
Yeah.
I was a little later, but in retrospect, I was not recognizing what a good story was, but but you know, there's something about that.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about because I was at the same like life experience stage in college trying to write fiction, and it's just so flat compared to what you can do now with a little more like, you know, experience and context. But that doesn't mean that this moment and that story for you or what you were working on then didn't feel so important. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And that's why this makes me feel old, right? Because I'm reading it and I'm like, you'll be okay, Michael. You'll be better. You know? And like, and this feels like the end of the world in a lot of ways, but like maybe even 5 or 10 years from now, when you reread a story like this or revisit a life experience like this, you would think to yourself, like, I had no clue, or like, this is not my best work or whatever. But it's still just so universal in a lot of ways, right? This coming of age and coming of age in this time. I mean, think about like kids these days that are growing up in an era of like school shootings. Like when they read stories about going to school that were before Columbine, it doesn't probably feel the same. It doesn't feel as authentic. They can't relate to it maybe. And also, I think what we tend to do when we refer to classics is, like I said, put them on a pedestal in a way that's like, no, this is the experience that you want to replicate. This is the experience that's profound and important. Yours is less so. But it's like, at least when it comes to something like a school shooting, it's like, no, that's more profound. You know, the idea that these days you can go to school and not come back. Like we have this way of like thinking that our elders and those that came before us, they were the ones that were important trailblazers. And it's like, well, why are we dismissing what's happening right now as being less important, or like it won't be a classic one day? People have to write about what's happening now and there will be other classics from it. But will we ever like knock Lord of the Flies off the shelf? Who knows?
No, there's a lot of shelves. There's a lot of room. I forget what the timing was, but there was some moment in time, like sometime after the printing press was invented, where there became more printed work in English than a person could read in one lifetime.
Yeah, exactly.
And they suddenly had to choose.
Yes.
And that's like, that's a struggle. Like, what do you read?
Yeah. And should you, I mean, if you're deciding what do I read and I'm reading the most important stuff, that's one thing. What do I read that I really want to enjoy? That's supposedly another thing. But it's like, why can't we just read what we like? What we like identify with like immediately? Why do we have to like read the things that we like kind of like, you know, force down our own throats?
I've been having trouble reading the best American short fiction anthologies. They feel very repetitive.
Yeah.
A lot of it's the same kind of emotional feeling. And sometimes I just start reading it and it's like, the story wasn't really for me.
Right.
This is for somebody else.
Do you think that has to do though, like the repetitiveness? Do you think that has to do with what we've talked about recently with the newsletter, like how MFA programs are producing like the same note?
Oh yeah. And each volume is kind of curated by an issue editor. So that person has like a feeling of what they like
right.
the most. And so they'll pick that thing, and you pick 20 versions of that thing,
right,
it's going to feel like that's their, you know, list.
Yeah. I think my takeaway from the story is like maybe like twofold, like one being that there might be an experience that's so universal or so formative like this, like going off to college, that it feels like maybe it's not worth writing about, because even as it's happening, you kind of know that
everyone's done that story.
Everyone's done it, and everyone's for the most part come out on the other side. So like, why do I need to be the one that articulates it? And my argument would just be that, well, you can articulate it better, perhaps, you know.
Well, it's not just that. I think it's with the nature of what is fiction. Fiction mm-hmm. is specific details that evoke a specific concrete in situ emotion. It's not abstract. Fiction right. is about concrete specifics. This is what problem we get in the workshop a lot, is people like vague, airy kind of like generalizations. And you're like, no, make it a story. Make it a story by putting a character in there with specific things. And so because of that, every way you tell that story is going to be different because it's specific to that particular character.
Yeah. So twofold in that sense, right? Like go ahead and do it and make it specifically yours, like you said.
Yeah.
And then also, I don't know, maybe read like some recent stuff, even if you don't think that it's necessarily going to be a classic or even one that you necessarily remember. There's something really enjoyable about reading something that's just easy to read. And so I guess my other takeaway is go ahead and indulge that side of yourself. Like go ahead and read the stuff that feels like it's not, you know, high quality, whatever. It is. If it's getting published in a lot of ways, it's met other kinds of bars, especially I would argue short stories. Yeah, I just enjoyed this one. And sometimes I have to enjoy something like a vegetable. I'm like, yeah, that was good. But I still want pizza, you know?
That's right.
And that's what this feels like. I'm full either way. Come on.
Well, my takeaway is very different, but I was thinking about this structurally. There's a lot of consternation over what is the structure of a short story. And I was like, this is a really interesting, it's like a structureless almost, but the structure is just like a series of kind of moments, right? It's just like a thing and then a thing and then a thing. And they kind of build towards, like there's threads in them. The whole thing is about him trying to get, it's almost a quest, right? How do I get to grace at the end? But it's not even obstacles along the way. It's just like moments along the way he has to kind of traverse to get to the end. And I always think of moments in a story as being emotional beats, like emotional moments. And not every moment in this story is like dripping with emotion, but they're just like these little kind of stepping stones of emotion along the way to that final, everything's going to be okay feeling at the end.
Yeah, they're all like in that same vein, like that same like weird melancholy. They're all building.
Yeah. And the structure is simple. The structure is just this moment leads to this moment, leads to this moment, leads to this moment, leads to the end. So I like that as like a kind of a guide for like structure doesn't have to be complicated. Structure doesn't have to be like, there's all kinds of different advice on how structure works and like rising action, falling action, climaxes and all this stuff. It can just be this leads to this, leads to this, leads to that. It's like just causation.
Yeah.
Like hitting billiard balls on a table. This one knocks into that one, which knocks into that one, which knocks into that one.
Yeah.
And then you get to the end.
So are you saying that like this is or isn't like a recognized structure, or it's just like this works too? You know what I mean?
There might be something in there that I didn't really, because I just, you know, read through it and that was just my thought at the end. And part of it is the way that it's like actually structured on the page or on the website is like just section. So it gives that feeling of just like things that cascade, but there's probably more to it than that, but I don't think it needs to be more to it than that.
Right.
You can do a lot within that structure. There's like different avenues to follow.
Right.
Like you can have like small things in the beginning and big things at the end and like weight it in different ways.
Yeah. And he does, like you said, have some flashbacks and things where you're kind of wondering, when did this happen?
Well, like moments don't even have to be narratively linear. They can just, emotional moments that happen in a kind of a way that makes sense.
Yeah.
A way that feels right.
Like yeah.
There's some connection between them and you kind of like, you get to the end of one and you're like, okay, now the next one has to carry that feeling forward and then move on to a new thing. And that happens.
Yeah. This feels like a real night in that way.
Yeah. That's a good thing to say. Cause you know, those sometimes those best nights that you remember from when you're young like this is like, they all felt like they culminated. Like I remember this random night ended with like this girl driving her car on a soccer field, trying to do donuts, but failing. And then we went home. And like that felt like this
pivotal
culmination to like this whole series of things that had happened before. It's not really, but it just feels that way.
Yeah. And there's something about being of that age and like under the influence that makes everything feel important, but it's worth capturing. All right. Thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed this episode, consider joining our Patreon. Your support helps us keep the show running. Find out more at patreon.com/whyisthisgoodpodcast. And for industry news, writing tips, and great short fiction, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/Naples Writers Workshop. You can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter at napleswritersworkshop.com.